Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Gene Oliver, and today I'm talking with artist, teacher, and avid adventurer and traveler Lorraine Bell. We have spent more hours than we would probably like to admit on a bus from Marrakesh out into the Sahara Desert, trying not to look over the edge of a cliff or get carsick. She has been an adventure with me on multiple occasions, and I was honored to teach at one of her live art workshops in the Cayman Islands. Lorraine is one of the most beautifully authentic women I know. Her heart for her faith, family, and others makes up the core of who she is and how she serves. Today, my dear friend is going to talk about the hardest thing she has ever walked through. Today, we will talk about losing a spouse and finding your life on the other side of grief. And the reason I wanted Lorraine to come on is because I know that her sharing her story will help somebody unpause and heal faster. And I know for certain that it's going to help somebody listening that maybe is not going through loss or grief, but that they know somebody else that is, and it will help you to just love them better. I think so often we don't know what to do, so we do nothing. And I think let's change that. Let's figure out how to love people well in the middle of their loss and grief. And so, Lorraine, with my whole heart, I love you. Thank you for trusting me with this. And thank you for being here today to talk with us.
Wow, Jean, that's hard to follow up all those beautiful words. Thank you so much. And it is my honor. I have not shared this story before. I've mentioned it briefly on my own podcast, just, you know, a little bit about being a widow, but the depth of, you know, the conversation we'll get into today. And it's because I do feel like this is a safe place. And I know that your intention is not to sensationalize anything, but to help others. And that's what I have found, that my purpose in life at this time in my life is to use my widowhood and to use that to honor God by helping as many people as I can. So I'm really happy to be here to be able to share with you.
Thank you for being here. Before we get started, would you just share a little bit about yourself and what you do? And so everybody has a little, you know, more complete picture of some other beautiful parts of who you are.
Sure. Well, I say, first of all, you know, I'm a mother and now have the title of widow, which at first was, you know, a horrible title. But I learned over time to embrace that and to honor that title. So that's part of who I am. I'm also an artist. And I teach online and I teach in person. And, you know, my sort of genre is, you know, the wandering artist. And I do travel sketchbooks. And I'm definitely a wanderer and an adventurer. So that's sort of where my wheelhouse is.
So will you share your love story?
I would be happy to do that. I met my husband in the Cayman Islands. He was working there and I was a congressional staffer in DC. And I went with some girlfriends on vacation down to the islands. Both Michael and I were recently divorced and we met my first night there at a beach bar and between the palm trees and the moonlight and this Caribbean sea lapping against the sand. I mean, it was a perfect setting for a romance story. So we met, we danced the night away, we spent the whole week together. And at the end of the week, I really thought that I'm never going to see this guy again. This was just a vacation fling, you know. He ended up showing up at the airport right as I was about to board. And he said, I'm going to call you. I'll see you soon. Mm-hmm. And I got on the plane with a, you know, big grin on my face, but I thought, I am never going to hear from this guy again. You know, I wanted to, I hoped to. And by the time I got back home a few hours later, I had 11 voice messages on my phone. And he flew up the following weekend to see me. And 6 months later, we eloped. We were married. So, and of course, the last thing in the world I wanted to do on that vacation was meet a guy, because I had just gotten rid of one. When you know, and there's no question that he was the one.
How many years were you married?
We were married 25 years.
Two kids. Beautiful businesses you built together.
We did. And we've had a wonderful life. We really have.
Yeah. Yeah. And he and his adventure is such a sweet part of your story, too. And so Mike passed away while he was away on a business trip. Even just that one extra aspect of your story is absolutely devastating. This is the day that your life and the life of your children paused. You were dealing with loss and the fog of grief, not only for yourself, but also in tandem with your two children. How long was it until you could honestly look at your own grief and loss separate from them?
Separate from my children?
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure I do even. Yeah. I don't think that's actually happened, because everything we do is in tandem with that. It is not at the forefront any longer. We chose to turn the darkness and the sorrow and the sadness into happiness. And I think we spend more time laughing and remembering and holding him up as an example in our lives. So it's made that, you know, the pain ease quite a bit. So that's how we do it. I do know that, I come from a very strong line of women. My father also propped up my mother to be a strong woman and his daughters to be a strong woman. And so to me, that initial feeling of fragility was really hard, and my children experienced the same thing. It's the outpouring of people, you know, wanting to be around us and comfort us. And, you know, that was really difficult. So together we sort of, you know, put our arms around each other and made this, you know, sort of wall around us to protect ourselves from, you know, not just, you know, the intrusiveness, but also, you know, so much love, so much overwhelming love from people. But at that time in your life, you can't accept it. You're just hurting too much. You also feel like you don't deserve it. And I don't want it. I don't want to be in this place. I don't want to be a widow. I don't want to have lost my father. You know, so we really rallied around each other to prop each other up during that time. And to this day.
No one can really know the impact of a life or a heart, voice, or love until it's no longer reverberating into our own life. How did Mike bring adventure into your life? And how did you two balance each other out?
Well, he was the wild one in the marriage. He was the adventurer and the fly by the seat of your pants kind of guy, Mr. Spontaneity. And I was the one always pumping the brakes, always, always, always. I was cautious and I was a planner and just, you know, he scared me to death and excited me at the same time. And it was a wild, wild ride. And, you know, Michael lived by the expression, it's easier to beg for forgiveness than, which I do not recommend as advice for any married couple. I think that's completely wrong, but that's what he lived by. So he was really good about making these crazy decisions, knowing I would love it eventually, but, you know, hoping that, you know, he could talk me into it at some point. And that's sort of, you know, we were the yin. And then at the same time, I think Michael also relied on me to ground him. And I was the one sort of always pulling at him to, you know, slow down, take a breath, take a beat. Is this really the wisest thing to do right now? He won mostly, but at the same time, he knew he could rely on me to tell him, you know, let's just pause just for a minute, you know. So in that way, we were a good balance for each other.
He wasn't just spontaneous. He was extravagant.
He was extravagant and very, very generous. I'll give you one example. This is probably the perfect one of his adventurous side and us balancing each other. You know, I went through, and you went through this too, when your first child goes off to college and you begin to feel that, that tug at your heart as a mother when the first one's leaving. I mean, you know it's coming, but when it comes, it's a loss in itself. and that baby leaves and goes off to college. Of course, they can't wait to get rid of you, but you're just holding on to their coattails. Like, call me, I'm here, you know, if you need me. And so he watched me go through that with my daughter, my first one, when she went off to school. And he watched how I grieved for her and how I would go and curl up on her bed and take a nap and just be among her things. And it was just killing him, you know. And of course, this is a natural process in life. We have to do that. We have to let our kids go. But it was really hitting me hard. So when our last one, our second one, was getting ready to go off to school, he knew it was going to be even worse because this was the last one and we were officially empty nesters. So my son went to college just a few hours away and we drove him to school. And of course, I lingered over making his bed up and unpacking his stuff and hanging his things in the closet. He couldn't get rid of me fast enough. My husband's trying to drag me out the door. And I finally relented and got in the car and, you know, cried for 10 minutes straight. And he would just put his hand on my knee and was quiet. And about 10 minutes into the ride, we had a couple hours to go home. And he just said, he goes, "Don't be mad at me." And I know whenever he started a sentence with "don't be mad at me," I knew something big was coming, something I wasn't going to like. And he just said, and I said, "What?" And he said, "We're leaving in 10 days for Barcelona and we're going on a cruise for 2 weeks to the Med." And I said, "Oh, no, we're not." And he said, he goes, "No, we are. I booked it. We're done. I paid for it. We're going." And I said, "Absolutely not." And he said, "Lore," he called me Lore. He said, "You and I have never had a trip together, just us two." And he said, "This is the best thing for you with letting Christian go. And it's the best thing for us as a couple. It's my time now. You know, the kids have had you all these years. Now it's my turn." And that was hard to argue with. But of course, mm-hmm. I was thinking of every excuse in the world. No, if anything is going to go wrong at college, it's going to happen in the first 2 weeks. I need to be here. Let's postpone it for later. And he said, "We are leaving. And if you're not coming, I'm going without you." So for the an hour and a half, I, you know, argued back and forth. And he was just laughing at me. And then he said, "Look, we're going to go to Barcelona. We're going to hit the Med." And he said, "And then we're going to go to Paris on the way back." And he got me at Paris. So I looked at him out of the side, I gave him a side eye, and I said, "Paris?" And he said, "I got you." And I said, "All right." And I said, "Well, I'm going to need to stop at a bookstore on the way home." So he pulled into Barnes & Noble. We spent the next hour on the floor of the travel section reading through books. And 9 days later, we were on our way to Barcelona, and it was the greatest gift he could have given me. I could have killed him. I didn't want to do it, but, you know, of course, nothing went wrong. Christian was fine. No, you know, nothing we couldn't handle. And that was his way. You know, he wanted to be extravagant with me and elaborate with his gift giving and, you know, loving me in his way.
How do you think Mike's extravagance and spontaneity and adventure and kind of that wild spirit, how do you, because I feel like you're extremely generous, and because I have taught for you also, knowing how you put things together, it was very, I think it just, your generosity really blessed people in the adventures we had and the thoughtfulness of things you pulled them think together, like the ideas. What about your kids and even for yourself, other things that you want to bring up? How do you think his adventure and generosity change their heart and how they are continuing to honor him and in their own lives in some way?
Well, they were very good students of his generous heart. And I have to say, both my children, I call them children, they're adults now. But I remember a time when my son and husband were in San Antonio, Texas, and my son was on a business trip with him. And my son told me when we got home, he said, "Mom," he said, "there was a man on the street in a wheelchair and he was begging and he didn't have any legs." And he said, "Dad went up to him and he knelt down beside him and he talked to him and he gave him his prayer book out of his pocket and he prayed with him. And then he gave him $100 bill. Like my son was just couldn't believe this. And he said, I just can't believe he did that." And I said, "Well, how did it make you feel?" And he goes, "It made me feel like I'm not good enough. Like I need to be better. I need to do better." and I need to take care of people more. And I said, and Christian, you know, to your dad, $100 bill, you know, he would give someone his last dollar. But for him, you know, the, you know, in his mind, he's assuming this will feed this man for a month, maybe, when your dad didn't need it, you know. I said, but the biggest thing to take away from it is that he knelt down beside him and talked to him, looked in his eye and engaged him. And so I know both of my children are like that. They have learned to really look into a person's soul when they're talking to them. They don't brush anybody off. I really admire them for that. And Michael was a great teacher of that, not just his children, but everybody around him.
No, to connect with people authentically. What a beautiful legacy.
It is. It was a beautiful legacy. Yeah.
How did you step out in action to make yourself believe again in hope when you felt lost?
That's a great question, because during the time of grieving, which, you know, there isn't really a set time. I still am grieving, you know, to this day. But there was an incident that gave me hope. And I remember thinking, and I would imagine a lot of spouses and maybe parents who've lost children will go through a period of feeling like you didn't do enough or you made mistakes. And I remember I have my husband, one of his very closest friends is a Catholic priest, and the type of priest that he would go ride Harleys with, and that kind of a priest. But he was around us all the time. And of course, he was at my side all the time after my husband passed, and still is. And I remember one day talking to him. I was in a really dark place, and my mind was going to all of the things that I didn't do for Michael, or all the times where I was upset with him, or the silly things I would get mad about, or the trying to hold him accountable or withhold forgiveness. You know, the fights that married couples have that are so ridiculous. And of course, now on the other side, I can look at it and think, what was I thinking? You know, but I was beating myself up over it. And I was also losing hope that I was a good person, and that would I have redemption? And would I, did, was I a good enough wife to him? I mean, I was going down this very dark rabbit hole. And so my priest friend, he listened to me. He was just smiling and nodding as I told him. I was confessing to him, you know, all these horrible things that I, you know, conceived that I had done and not done for my husband. And he let me finish. And then he looked at me and he said, Lorraine, the journey of faith is messy. He said, it's not a path of gold. He said, it is, you got to get down in the trenches and in the muck, and you have to walk that journey. It is ugly and it's messy. And he said, and God wouldn't want it any other way. And he said, and that's how you find your faith. That's how you find hope. And he said, and you're sitting here beating yourself up, but in reality, God is saying, you know, to you, well done, good and faithful servant, you got your partner across the finish line. And as a married couple, that's your duty, that's your responsibility, is to take your partner by the hand and get them to the kingdom, get them over the finish line. Mm-hmm. And so that one statement that he said to me, he said, you know, God is praising you right now. He's honoring you because you did, you completed your mission. And he said, and now Mike is in heaven and he is going to get you across the finish line. It was beautiful. It restored my hope in everything. And now every little dark thing that creeps into my mind, every little thing that, you know, Satan sends in, these little dark arrows, I can instantly, you know, just, you know, diminish those because of that one statement. Mm-hmm. And it's the journey of faith is messy.
Ah. You are so fortunate. So many people do not have somebody that comes beside them that can speak just love and wisdom. He very much took your hand. I feel like he did more than that. He literally wrapped his arms around you and comforted you in your lowest moments. And so what did you make yourself do? And in this same breath, how did you give yourself permission and grace to grieve?
So our bank called a loan 3 days after my husband died, and the wheels were set in motion. We had quite a bit of our land and business leveraged in the Cayman Islands. And once he was gone, you know, those wheels were set in motion. And so I literally had to, you know, fight for our lives at that point. So I wasn't given the ability to grieve. And in a way, I look at it now as a blessing. It was a blessing that got me through. I went into kind of robot mode and I had to just get in there and fight. And it, that's a long and ugly story, but, you know, it was a year of fighting. And, you know, in the end, you know, I prevailed. We did lose 2/3 of our assets, but, you know, God left enough and more than I could handle. So it was all good in the end. But it wasn't until a year later where I just, you know, one day sat on the edge of my bed and broke down because I hadn't had a moment to do that. I had my brain was so compartmentalized at that time that I didn't let myself think about the grieving process. And so that's when it sort of started.
What would you say to someone? I'm throwing something at you that I didn't share with you beforehand, but what would you say to somebody in the beginning process of loss or grief that you wish, you know, that like you looking back, you had a big job to do. And I think too, to expand on that a little bit, I mean, your husband had a very large business. That wasn't what your business was, right? Like, and you literally had to dive in to a world that you didn't know inside and out. Doing and being busy is probably a blessing and a curse, but it, in the middle of loss and grief, but somebody who is just starting the process, what permission do you wish you would have given yourself sooner?
Well, I eventually did do this, but I wish it had been sooner, but I made peace a priority in my life. Mm-hmm. I had to stop the noise. I had to let go of some relationships that were toxic. I didn't realize they were toxic until time went on. And I had to let those go. And that in itself was a grieving process. That was a loss. You know, people that I thought were very near and dear to me, I realized that they weren't good for me and had to cut that off. So I gave myself permission to do that. And push through the guilt. And I also gave myself permission to not answer every phone call and email and text message. The people that really loved me and cared about me would wait. I knew that they would be there for me when I was ready to respond. So, you know, just giving myself permission to do things and to set boundaries. And I really had outlined those boundaries. I didn't know what they were until I started looking back and saying, this is intrusive. This is hurting me. This is causing me stress. I'm comforting these people. And I just don't have the capacity right now to do that.
No, that's such good advice. Not only about relationships, but about thank you notes and phone calls and emails and texts and all of the other things. Because people do care and love you, but you don't have the bandwidth to be able to do that in a way that maybe other people need when you're in such great loss and grief. Mike's been gone for 6 years now. I had to actually double check the dates, Lorraine, when I wrote that. Because it feels like only yesterday. And then again, so much life has gone on without him. So that's me looking at it. I can't even imagine how you feel about 6 years. Can you tell me how you found your way on your own? And then in tandem with this, if you can, maybe what had you forgotten about yourself?
I love this question because it made me really think about some things that had happened to me that, you know, that I realized that I had lost myself long before he was gone. And it really started years before my sister had come to visit me in the Cayman Islands, and we were at an outdoor concert, beach party type of thing. And we were sitting at a table, the two of us, like two old married ladies. And we were watching everyone on the dance floor having a great time. And she said to me, she said, "Lorraine, that's you." And she was pointing at someone. I said, "What's me?" And she said, that girl there in the cowboy hat, she said, "That's you." And I looked and I saw this girl dancing with no one on the dance floor. She was just not, I mean, she had cowboy boots on and a cowboy hat and just dancing and just to her own drummer, her own beat, and having the time of her life, smiling from ear to ear. And you could just look at her and see just joy emanating from her. And I realized my sister was right. That used to be me. I was that girl. And I said, "What happened to me?" And she said, "You know, we got married. We had kids. We became everything to everybody else that we've lost ourselves." And so that was sort of the first realization that, wow, I'm not even close to that person anymore. I loved that person. Hmm. I loved that girl. Where did she go? When did she leave? And so that was kind of the beginning of it. And then after my husband passed, he and I both had a very good friend who was a very analytical, he's an accountant, a very analytical guy. And in his struggle to make me feel better, and also he was grieving his friend as well. We were having a discussion and he, you know, it's almost like he had this aha moment. And he said, "Oh my gosh, Lorraine," he goes, "what if it's not over? What if the best is still yet to come?" I remember looking at him and kind of being dumbfounded by that question. I said, "Well, I sure as hell hope the best is still yet to come. Otherwise, what is the point? Why am I here? If it's not, it's got to be. Like, my faith is so strong that I know I haven't just had the best and then it's just nothing till the end of my life. The best is still yet to come. In whatever form that is, in whatever way God chooses to reveal that to me, the best is yet to come. And I believe in that. And that's what gave me, you know, even more hope. And it also helped me to begin to transform into that happy girl. Mm-hmm. And I gave myself permission to dance and to have joy and to feel things again, to really heighten my senses and to feel real happy things and to live in a joyous way.
Well, and losing Michael, it paused the life that you had, but then when you unpaused your life and started to move forward, you have to do it on your own, right? You're here, you're on your own, you're having, because you're a self-aware person, because you have thoughtful people around you, because of your beauty, you have two beautiful children that are just, they're smart and kind. And, but you're starting to figure out, just like you did that with that moment with your sister, what happened to her? What are some of the other things as you unpaused and started moving forward? What were some of the other things that you were like, "And I'm going to pick that up. And I'm going to pick that up"? Because I'm positive there's a lot of things you put down. I know that there was a lot of things you said, "I'm not going to do these things anymore." But what other things, besides wanting to have that joy and being that fun, spontaneous, you know, girl, what other things did you find that you were picking up? And that you were starting to recognize yourself more in the mirror?
Well, I think travel would have to be at the top of that list. I mean, I was a traveler before I met my husband. And I think that's another thing that drew us together, was that we both loved adventure and we loved to travel. And that was a really hard one, to step out for the first time, you know, after he was gone, and to travel on my own. But I knew, and it was hard. It was so hard. But I knew if I didn't do it, I was never going to do it. And I knew that sitting in my house every day, all day, was not healthy. And I knew that there was so much more of the world that I wanted to see, so many cultures to experience, so many experiences, so many new best friends out there that I will never meet if I don't get out there and do it. So that was a huge thing. Was to get out and, you know, and Boy, my first trip was to Mexico, and I've talked about that before on my podcast, and that was scary and fun. And then not long after that, I went to France with you and met you there. And then Italy for 5 weeks, and we went to Morocco, to Africa. And so I've been just, you know, traveling nonstop until, you know, COVID, unfortunately. But I had this realization that, you know, if I don't keep moving, I'm going to wither up, and I'm going to, you know, become, you know, even worse than I was before. You know, I'm going to just lose myself completely. I'm going to be this non-person that everybody's going to forget about or feel sorry for, you know, and gosh, pity's the worst. You don't want people to pity you.
I think too, especially with marriage, and I'm sure other relationships, there would be things kind of like this, but especially with marriage, and I'm only talking as a woman. I mean, obviously before I was married, I did everything myself. I was very self, you know, very, you know, capable of all of the things with my car or with maintenance things in the house or whatever. I did all of those things. And then when you are married for a long time, we each kind of take jobs. We take little things. And I think of all the things that I don't do anymore. And at one point I did. And I was even saying, I'll be 50 in May. And I was saying to Kelly, I really love road trips. And I used to take road trips all the time by myself. And I think I'm going to take a road trip by myself, because I feel like if I don't, I may never do that again. And Ben and Kelly were like, why would you want to take a trip without us? But it was almost though, so I don't forget I can. So there's certain things like that that I'm sure Michael did for you and you did for him. He just happened to leave first. He would have been in that same situation of all those beautiful things you did for him. And so what did starting over reveal about how you are today? Because you did start over, what are some of those things that when you look at yourself now, maybe you're doing them for the first time. Maybe you used to do them all the time and you started doing them again. And what did it do? I know I'm throwing all these things to you that you're like, thanks for nothing, for not giving these to me first. But as a woman, what are you really proud about yourself and who you are right now?
Yeah, that was a lot to unpack there. Well, so probably the thing I'm proudest of is that I'm sitting here today, that I've made it to this point. And as far as starting over, I mean, there have been a lot of false starts. I continually start over. I don't know yet where I'm going or what I'm doing. But I am proud that the innate sense of, you know, protecting my family and children kicked in right away when we were losing everything. I can remember a very proud moment was when I was sitting in an office. I had my two lawyers on each side of me, but sitting across the table from 8 receivers and bankers and their set of attorneys, and being, you know, almost shaking their fingers in my face saying, we're taking everything from you. We're coming after you. You know, it's over, it's done. And, you know, not one of them acknowledged the fact that I had just lost my husband 17 days before, you know. And I remember in that moment thinking, oh no, I'm a widow, but that doesn't mean I'm a victim. And I am not going to lay down and roll over for anyone. I have never done it in my life. And I'm not going to start now because I all of a sudden have this title of widow. And in that moment, something inside of me just took over. And, you know, without getting into too much detail, I let them all have it. I let them all have it. And I refused to bow down to them. And I fought like crazy. And I to the point where they finally a year later settled with me because they knew I wasn't going away. So I'm really proud of that. I'm proud that I fought for it. I also am proud that I didn't let someone victimize me. And I think that happens to way too many women, widows or not. And I know that, in a marriage, I think, in my marriage in particular, we made all the decisions together. I mean, I didn't do anything on my own Michael did, but I was always running by everything. What do you want for dinner? Where do you want to go this weekend? And I had a hard time making decisions when he was gone. I really literally had no one to turn to and ask. Not that I needed to. I woke up and I mean, every day I wake up and can go anywhere and do anything I want, which might seem exhilarating, but it's petrifying. It's petrifying. It's paralyzing. So just being able to make decisions became really hard for me. And it wasn't until I think my son, one day I asked him something ridiculous, like, what time do you want to eat? And he was like, Mom, make a decision. I don't care. And then he looked at me, he said, I don't recognize you. Like, this isn't you. Like make a decision. And I thought, okay, number one, I'm really annoying the crap out of him right now. And then I thought, what am I doing? Why can't I decide that we're eating dinner at 6 o'clock? Why do I have to check with everybody? So that was a really hard thing to do. And, that was a big turning point too, when I finally just started making the rules myself. I didn't have to account to anyone. I mean, there was no one to account to. So why was I trying to?
One of the things you mentioned a little bit ago, and I would love to explore this a little more or just share what you're thinking when you said there's a lots of false starts. And I think that's a really great way to say what I know you're trying to talk about, because it is in those decision-making processes, right? And also, it's just you. You don't have to make a decision for anybody else anymore. It's all about you. Would you share a little bit more what you mean by there's lots of false starts?
Yeah. So I think when you're grieving, a lot of times, and I'm speaking from my experience and people that I've talked to, a lot of times you get sick and tired of feeling sad. You can't help it. You are sad, but that whole state of sadness is exhausting. And so many times I would wake up and say, all right, today I'm not going to be sad. I am going to go and I'm going to drive out to the park and I'm going to sit and sketch and, pack a picnic lunch. And then I get into the process of doing that. And then I start thinking, well, that's going to be really sad to sit there by myself and have a picnic lunch. And, oh, it's cloudy. I don't want to go sketch. And then I would start making excuses. Looking back, I know that was avoidance. It was just avoiding, it was the effort too. It was a lot of effort to go do that. So, that's the smaller false starts. There's also, you and I talked about this. I was really thinking about moving to Italy and buying something there or taking a couple years and moving there. And I really, to talk to a realtor, was really moving in that direction and thought, yeah, I can see myself in this light. This life, this is me. I can see myself doing this. Other people could see me there. People were encouraging me and helping me. And so that became a false start, because the closer I got to it, the more I realized, is that really right for me right now? Maybe later, but not right now. So I think, that happens a lot. It still happens all the time. Even with things that I can't control, like starting the Wandering Artist Retreats that you came to Cayman and taught for all these lovely women, that was a false start, because I had this vision of doing these retreats a lot. But, then not long after that, we had COVID, and then so I couldn't pursue that anymore, not for a while. So, just life happens. But it's, also not knowing what do I want to do. It goes back to that. I can literally do everything I want, but I'm so scared to do anything,
Well, and I think what I love about with this false starts is some are going to give yourself the grace that they're going to be. There are going to be a bunch of false starts, and you can change your mind. Like, you started to go down one path. And the great thing is you were able to say, just because I've invested all this time and energy and other people are helping me, I can stop. and that doesn't feel right. And that's how you're going to figure things out, is walking things out and turning it around when they're not for you. And so I wanted to ask you, how do you honor Michael now?
Well, my children and I honor him every day by just living. I mean, we just live. He died young. Michael was 51 when he died. That's young. Mm-hmm. But in his 51 years, he lived the fullest life of anyone that I know. I mean, just he crammed so much into that space. And I can even look back now in his last year of his life. It's kind of this weird feeling of like, I think he really knew he didn't have a lot of time left because of the amount of things that he was doing and the extravagance and he just never could sit still for a minute. And so we've sort of all adopted that, my children and I, that, not to the extent that he did, but we kind of live by this. We never say, one day I'm going to do this. We say today I'm going to do this right now. We don't put anything off anymore. And I think that is also really good advice for any married couple, is don't put off anything, do it. I wish that I had traveled with my husband years and years and years before we ever did. I mean, once we started, we never stopped, but it took, poor him, it took 20 some years before I would actually just go away on a trip alone with him because I was afraid to leave my children, So that's how we honor him now. We kind of think about him with every move. And I do have, my son is getting married in 2 weeks and my daughter's getting married 5 weeks after that. So, what we decided to do, his loss and the lack of his presence at these weddings is huge. There's just no way around that. We've had to kind of work around that. But what we made an effort together, all three of us, that we do not want anyone to be sad or to look at a picture of him and cry or to make it a sad event, because we know that he would be so proud and so happy for them. So we want to just honor him at both weddings in a way that makes everyone laugh and makes them remember the person that he was, because he was a laugher. He would want everybody to be happy and enjoying themselves. So that's another way that we're trying to honor him.
And his for anyone listening that's going through great loss, what words do you have for them?
First and foremost, I would say, give yourself a pass. My very wise sister, I've mentioned a few times, I remember right after he passed, there was some pressing family thing going on, and I couldn't bear it. I just couldn't see myself doing it. And my sister said, "Hey, you have a pass. Your husband died. If you ever had a pass in your life, you have it now. Don't do it." And it was so empowering. And so I would say to someone, take that pass. You've earned it. You have a right to it. And say no. Say no to the things that you are not capable of. The other thing I would say is that, it is okay not to answer messages and phone calls and things like we've talked about. It is okay not to respond to every single person right now. Set boundaries. You're going to soon learn who the real friends are in your life through this process, unfortunately, and keep those people close and let everybody else go. And allow yourself whatever time is good for you to grieve. Don't let anyone tell you what the process is. If I had one person, I had 100, tell me about the 5 stages of grief, or the 7 or the 12. I mean, I've looked it up. There's so many stages. Yes, I think they're all very true and real, but I mean, there's no process. There isn't, it doesn't go in order. Some of them you go through more than once. So I would ignore all of that advice and just let yourself do it in your space and your time in exactly the way that you feel it in the moment. That's my advice for a grieving person. Don't let anyone tell you, and don't let anyone rush you through it. I lost a very good friend over telling me, it's been a year. I mean, that just that kind of dangling question mark at the end. And I just, I just thought, you don't really know me. You don't really understand me. And you're also not taking the time to think about me right now. There is no time. It's been 6 years for me, and I have days where I absolutely lose it. I mean, just can't function. And then I'll have 10 great days. So there's no formula. There's no fixing it. You have to walk with it and feel it and experience it.
Let's change the question also now to talk to the people listening that they have the opportunity and the invitation to love well somebody else going through loss and grief. What can people do, and also to not do, for someone going through pain?
Right. Well, I before I answer that, I do want to say that I know that every single person, well, I'm going to say 99% of the people who speak to you when you're grieving, that what they say comes from a really loving and good place. So they mean well. They may not say the right words. I think the intention to love on you is there. The words may sting a little bit, or they may be, it's not what you want to hear, and that's okay. So I always try to keep that in mind, that I know this person loves me and they want the best. And I will acknowledge also that for someone, and I've experienced with people that have, friends of mine whose husbands or children have passed since I've gone through this, I know now that there are no words. So I try to come up with the best possible thing to do for them. But I know that it is hard for a person. It's awkward. It's uncomfortable. You don't know what to say. So I acknowledge that as a widow. So I'll say that the best thing that someone said to me, and that person actually is Eugene, was, and I'll just kind of set the scene a little bit. You and I hadn't physically met. We knew each other through email and messaging. We knew who each other was. And then I joined you on your Danube cruise. And we went on that, it wasn't the Danube, it was the Seine to France. And when I first met you, you sort of just threw your arms around me. Like, you came running towards me, almost knocked me over and embraced me. And didn't let go. I mean, you hugged me the longest anyone has ever hugged me other than my husband. And I instantly felt like, I just felt like this relaxation, like this, oh my gosh, this feels so good. And then later on, that maybe that night or the next night, we found ourselves alone at a table and we had a glass of wine together. And you said, you didn't say, I'm sorry for your loss, or, this is God's plan, or all those things that people say. You said, tell me your three favorite things about Michael. You used his name. You've never met him. And you wanted to know my three favorite things. It was beautiful. It was profound. And I think we ended up talking for a couple of hours that night. It was such a gift. And I now do that to people that I meet that I didn't know their spouse or their child or whatever. I always want to know their name, and I want to know what they were like. Tell me about them, because people who are grieving want to talk about the people they've lost. Mm-hmm. They want to. Nobody wants to, but they want to. So give them that grace. So I would say that's the best gift you can give. And I learned such a lesson there. I will, just before I go into the what not to say, I do want to tell you one other thing that you did, Jean. When we were in Africa at Ides Fell, that beautiful Kasbah that we stayed at, Michelle Fletcher's place, we were with this beautiful group of women and we were sitting in this amazing place. And you and I were sitting next to each other on a chaise lounge. And without even thinking, you reached over and you just started stroking my hair. And that feeling, I mean, I hadn't been touched in so long. I didn't even realize I hadn't been touched until you did it. And that, I mean, I just turned to you and I said, that feels so nice. And you said, oh, I'm glad. And I said, I haven't been touched in so long. Mm-hmm. And then you immediately went to my shoulders and were massaging my shoulder. And you're like, I never thought about that before. I never thought about, someone who loses their spouse. They've lost, that intimacy, the intimacy of holding someone's hand or just your skin being touched by someone else. And of course that trip ended up, you know, that's a really touching thing, but it ended up the rest of the trip, everybody was constantly coming up and hugging me or massaging my shoulders or stroking my hair. It ended up being just absolutely beautiful. But those were two gifts that you alone gave to me. And so now I put it into practice. And I know that a woman who's lost her spouse hasn't been touched in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I always, you know, rub an arm or touch their hand. And usually you get a really gracious response.
That's so interesting too. I didn't remember that about the touch aspect in Africa, but it just you saying that, there was a friend of mine years ago that had gone through a divorce and she had gone for a massage, and during her massage she started crying. And she almost was like embarrassed, like, why am I crying? And I think she started to apologize to the masseuse, and the masseuse was able to say, no, like you've gone through something of a great loss, but we need human touch. And I think also it's such a reminder. I think you think touch and you think it's like it has to be sexual, right? Like we're talking about intimacy. We need intimacy. And so it's such a really sweet reminder of somebody who has gone through, take their hand, right? And another aspect I wanted to say, because it makes it sound like I'm super wise that I knew to ask those three things. And I knew to ask you though, because I watched a neighbor years ago have two twin little daughters. And at, I think about 2 weeks, they lost one of them. And the other one, their daughter, Darby, they were able to bring home. And I watched the great grief, like firsthand as you're watching somebody. And I watched also how many people, because they didn't know what to do or say, they said nothing. And then I also watched that people were afraid to bring up the other girl's name. And so it taught me, like by watching her grief on that. So here it's been 13 years since that little girl passed away. And I still, when I have the opportunity to bring her up, I do. And she would tell you, I'm one of very few people that will speak her name. And so don't believe the lie that if you bring something up, then you're going to make somebody sad. They're already sad. Somebody going through loss and grief and hardship, they're already sad. They're already heartbroken. When we can say the name of who they're missing, that's not going to make it worse. I think we think that we're going to make things worse. And just because they don't show it on the outside doesn't mean there's not sadness on the inside. That's right. And so I learned that from her.
It's a good risk to take, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, like you said, she's living with that sadness, but to think about the one that she lost is probably, to be able to talk about her or hear her name is going to bring mm-hmm. joy instantly. So I think it's a good risk to take.
Well, she thinks about her every day, just like you think about Michael every day.
Every day.
Yeah. So, yep, every day. And so, but is there anything that somebody should not do?
Well, I talked about the 99% of people will say, you know, try their best. They'll fumble over and say the best. They'll do the best they can. And I give them grace, and I let that go, you know, even though they're not necessarily the words that I want to hear. I know they're trying, but there is a 1% faction that has a morbid curiosity. And, you know, that I experienced, and, you know, I wasn't going to even bring it up today, but I do think it's important, because I think if anyone's listening and you've been guilty of this, I think you should know that it's not okay to ask, you know, intimate details about how your spouse or child died. or how, you know, I'll just give you an example of a question that was asked of me. Is I had someone literally ask me, oh, your husband died on a business trip. Well, how did they get the body from where he was to, you know, where he was the funeral? I mean, why, what's the point? And do you think that possibly that would be a really hard question for someone to answer? And so, you know, I know that those things are popping in everybody's mind. Of course they do, but you got to filter it and make sure that you don't let those slip out, because very, very harmful, very hurtful. That's that 1% that, you know, or I got asked a lot too. Oh, did he have a will? Well, I can't even imagine. First of all, it's no one's business. And, you know, why on earth would you say that to a grieving widow? So those are things that I'd say really be careful about. Think about what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And then the other things, you know, I think it's, you know, well, you know, you'll there'll be someone else, or, you know, this is God's plan, or he's in a better place. All of that's true, you know, probably. We you know, I don't know about you'll find someone else, but, you know, we know he's in a better place. We know it's God's plan. We know all these things. So saying the obvious, you know, isn't comforting. So I would just avoid that. And instead, you know, bake something for them, or call them, make a point of calling someone. You know, in the beginning, you're so overwhelmed. And in the first couple of weeks, you are so overwhelmed with cards and gifts and flowers and messages, and you can't even absorb it all then. But it quiets down after that. It's a month later, it's 2 months later, it's 3 years later, it's 6 years later that you don't hear from anyone. That's the time to reach out and to say, hey, I was just thinking about you. And you know what they mean, you know what they're thinking about. And it's nice to know that someone remembered that, hey, I need to, you know, check on Lorraine, because I know that she had a hard time. So those are real gifts. And I would focus on doing that.
I love the idea of 3 months later saying, could I bring you dinner tonight?
That's amazing.
That would be amazing. And I think it's absolutely true. When you're so, I would think, so overwhelmed in the beginning, so many people are giving so much. I bet the silence added so much to your pain and grief too.
The silence is deafening, you know, not trying to be trite, but it really is. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, not even can I bring you dinner, but hey, I want to come over. Let's walk together.
Yeah.
Take a walk. I mean, you don't have to speak when you're walking. Or can I take your children for the day? Can I take them to the movies? You know, my children are adults, but, you know, if for someone who has young children, you know, those are real gifts. And so those are the kind of things where you can really help someone. Mm.
Well, Lorraine, thank you so much for just being here and talking so openly. I would love if you could tell our listeners where they could find you, because you have online courses, but I think you even I would love for you to even share some of your travel, which I love so much that you have some art and travel opportunities coming up too. And so could you just share where they can find you?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, I have a website, it's lorrainebell.com, and on Instagram it's Lorraine_Bell, I believe. And I think you'll probably have all that in the show notes later.
Yes.
But lorrainebell.com. I have a class on Jean's site too, an illustrated journey. So that was a fun class to put together. And I am, besides these two weddings, which, by the way, that's another thing we didn't touch on, but with these two weddings coming up, our family is growing by two. You know, we lost mm-hmm. one and now we're growing by two. So that's a really happy thing. We're so thrilled about that. But right on the heels of that, I'm heading to Italy to teach in Orvieto with Adventures in Italy, and teaching travel sketching. So I'm super excited about that. The COVID restrictions are being lifted. It's getting better and better to travel. And I think it's going to be fun. A really amazing group of women. There's still a couple spots left if anyone hears this before. And then right after that, I'm meeting my sister and my other sister in Dublin for 2 weeks. We're going to go drive around Ireland. I've never been. She's never been. And we're going to be two single ladies pub hopping in Ireland. So that'll be crazy. And then this fall, I'm going to do a Camino walk, and it's a pilgrimage. I'm going to do, it's 500 kilometers, which is about 700 miles. I'm going to walk from France through the Pyrenees for a couple of days and down into Spain and walk the entire length or width of Spain. And it's a pilgrimage called the Camino de Santiago. And it's going to be a spiritual journey for me. A lot of people do it. They have about 300,000 pilgrims a year that walk this walk. And I tried to get a lot of people to go with me, that nobody can come. So I'm going to make the journey by myself, which is okay. I have heard that really everyone who makes the journey does it by themselves, even if they're with a group of people. It's a solo journey in your heart and in your mind and your spirit. And that's going to take 52 days. So I'm going to actually take one more week and walk all the way to the coast to a place called Finisterre, which is also known as the end of the world. So this is something I really wanted to do for 10 years now. And so I'm going to do it this year. So I'm training for that. So that's the big one.
Don't you think Mike literally would just be saying, like, look at you making plans?
But I'm not doing the backpack and hostel type version. I'm doing, and he would be doing the 5-star hotels and walk some days and not other days. But I'm actually doing where I'm getting, you know, each day my luggage gets taken from place to place and I have a day pack. So I'm doing.
Still think it counts. It still counts.
I'll be walking the full, well, it'll be 800 miles by the time I walk to the coast. So I'm going to do that. But yeah, I think he would. And you know, everything I do is sort of inspired by, he'd be like, you go, girl, you got this. I can hear him now.
Mm-hmm. So good. Lorraine, thank you so much. Love you and appreciate you. And just thanks for being here today.
It's my pleasure, Jean. And I just also want to thank you too for honoring people that are in the position that I'm in, for people that have lost someone, people who might be alone. That is such a gift that you're giving, and your reason behind wanting to do this, have this conversation is, you know, both of us are hoping that if it just even touches one heart or helps one person, and you said it earlier before we started, you said, you know, maybe this will allow one person to gain a year of their life back or, you know, not go through such a long process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it helps anyone in any way, it's my pleasure. I feel like it's my duty and responsibility to honor my widowhood.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. I love you.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening and see you next time.